coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. Carl and Jason indulge in some Episode 7 speculation as they ponder how the characters of the Big Three might be portrayed at the start of the sequel trilogy. No spoilers here, just speculation. So assume your thinker pose, relax, and watch out for Wampas.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 85. Here we go again. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Lando Calrissian to my Dexter Jetster. We have Carl LeClaire.
So good to see you! And you know
Come
what,
Jason? I'll be right with you!
You got a lot of guts coming here after what you pulled.
Well, I've just got a lot of guts.
You got a lot of stuff, period. You're a big man. Yes. So, Jason, happy birthday, buddy.
Oh, shucks.
Nothing better than recording an episode on yours and George Lucas's birthday. And we should give to our last guest, Chris Hothice Planet Smith from the Sarlacc Pit, is also celebrating his birthday today.
Yes.
So this is a Star Wars day of birthdays. I think when George Lucas was born, I think he had a force vision at a young age that another great Star Wars enthusiast would be born on that very same day.
Aww.
Several years later. Well, several years later.
Yes. I'm about a third of his age. Yeah.
Do you know how old he is today?
I believe he's
70.
So, okay. And I'm 25.
You're 25.
So, oh, almost a third years. Of his age.
Yeah. All right.
It's crazy.
Yes. So, I'm happy to be recording on your birthday.
Oh, and I'm happy to be recording, period. So,
you're like, this might be a treat for you, but I just like it.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So, we are going to be talking today a little bit about, still so much stuff about the casting. Lots of great coverage has been done on all sorts of different podcasts. But Jason and I, tonight we just figured it'd be fun to just kind of chat about where we kind of see our big three being developed by the time we get to episode 7. So, kind of a little bit of our expectations, a little bit of what we hope to see. Obviously, we don't know any of this to be certain because we don't have any clue about the plot. But just as far as story, speculating storytelling wise, like how would it make sense to develop these characters 30 years later? Jason, you know, I found it. What was difficult for me though, while I was just jotting down a few notes this afternoon, is knowing so much of the EU that I do. I mean, not that I'm a guru, like you know, the guys from
Beyond the Films.
But it's kind of hard to purge that knowledge because it's like, well, this is probably what Luke is like. It's like, no, but I've read that somewhere. And it's not to say that the EU didn't do a good – I think the EU did a pretty good job of representing the big three for the decades that follow. But I also know that episode 7 is probably going to take – it's going to take its own slant to it. And so I was just kind of thinking of like, all right, how do I think logically based on the last time we saw them at the end of Return of the Jedi? They're all pretty young. I mean, Luke is – his character is what, like probably in his late 20s at the oldest. Mm-hmm. Han is in his like mid-30s. So, you know, like they still have a lot of life to live. So it's just kind of speculating of kind of what we see them doing, what we see them acting like maybe. So, yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about today.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. But before we get to our topic, of course, we have a matchup given to us by our last guest, Chris Smith, from the Sarlacc Pit. It was IG-88 versus Forlom, or as some people say, 4LOM. Jason, what do you call him, actually?
I used to call him 4LOM, but then I heard so many people calling him 4LOM that it just sort of entered my vocabulary. So I use it interchangeably.
Gotcha. So. But anyway, we got a couple of responses from the Larians. Jason, I'm going to hand it over to you.
All right. Over on Facebook, Jimmy Phillips says, IG-88. I mean, he's an assassin droid. Plus, 4LOMs, big melon, and bug eyes make way too easy a target. Brian V. Klein says IG-88. Like Jimmy said, he's an assassin droid. Plus, 4LOM has the disadvantage of Zuckuss always nagging him about not taking out the garbage, or watching too much pod racing on the holonet, or forgetting his birthday, etc., etc., etc. Matthew Marks says definitely IG-88. Don't remember 4LOM's story at all from Tales of the Bounty Hunter, so I guess he didn't make much of an impression. So going with Iggy Pop. And Joey Letson says, Iggy Pop? The write-ins are getting a little too weird. Iggy Pop, I believe, is a nickname somebody used for IG-88 on Robot Chicken, right?
Yep. So it's Robot Chicken? Yeah, it's Robot Chicken, where they refer to him as... It's Dengar turns into, hey, Iggy Pop?
There you go. So that's Iggy Pop, Joey. Anyway, he continues on saying, I think IG-88 would take it. He's an assassin droid, and 4LOM is just a mean protocol droid. I'm basing this off my memory of the Shadows of the Empire game. IG-88 was really tough. Plus, there's like 10 IG-88s or something, right? I think it's 4. But anyways, so if 4LOM managed to defeat one of the 88s, backups would just get him back the next week. Aaron W. Muse says, I think IG-88. Thanks for the show. Y'all do a good job. Oh, well, thank you, Aaron. Luke Searden says, this is my first time weighing in on any of these. I always seem to miss them. He says he's going to throw his vote in for 4LOM. Arnold Corso says, WH-7, the serving droid from Dexter's Diner. No, seriously, though. 4LOM. IG-88 is tough, but he's got too many exposed circuits. I'd imagine he'd be pretty easy for 4LOM to target just some of those wires. 4LOM, by contrast, has pretty good armor. Rene Tajima Bier says, Zuckuss. No, 4LOM. Ah, I'm confused. That's in reference to some of the stuff that we said on our last episode with Chris. Joe Hogan says, gonna go with IG Stickboy 88. 4LAMES got nothing on him. James Clark says IG-88 would make a calculator out of 4LOM. I actually feel kind of bad for this one because of how one-sided it is. Patrick Kotef says, my vote goes to IG-88. And on Twitter, we got a handful of responses. We got one from @Skirata10 says IG-88. @Leon355 says IG-88 gets my vote. A robot with no morals and two guns should kick 4LOM's arse. Don't you think he looks like the Terminator? Possibly. @BallsInPlay says rooting for the 4LOM underdog. @Hilbo498 says IG-88, definitely. And finally, @KingOg9Cubits says IG-88 looks like a robot can of Raid and 4LOM like a big bug. IG-88 wins. And we also have one final response, that being from our good buddy Chris Smith, who gave us this message or this matchup in the last episode. So let's play that right now.
The winner of, for me, 4LOM and IG-88. I have to go with IG-88 for two main reasons. Number one, the IG series of droids are assassin droids. That's their primary function. Number two, 4LOM wasn't a solo bounty hunter. Him and Zuckuss always went together. They teamed up for most of their bounties, so they fought as a team and not as individuals. So I always look at it as IG-88. And IG-88 was a pretty bad dude. When you go back and check out Tales of the Bounty Hunters, and you'll get stories on each one of them. And IG-88, even though he looks like he can't do much, he was a badass. That's why I choose him.
And with that, we have a total Larian tally of 13 for IG-88 and 4 for 4LOM. So, Carl, where do you stand on this?
You know, I gotta give it to my boy Iggy Pop. You know, I'm gonna cheat and borrow a little bit of what Chris said as well. And, you know, I think the reason I do is 4LOM you know, he usually teams up with Zuckuss. They're kind of a two-way street. So without Zuckuss, you know, I think that changes his parameters a bit. Whereas IG-80 does, I mean, he's an assassin droid. And also, he's like the hardest boss in the Nintendo 64 Shadows of the Empire game. So that, you know, Forlom wasn't in that. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to IG-88. By the way, did you notice in the cantina scene in A New Hope that some of the machines behind the bar kind of look like the top of IG-88's head?
Yes, yeah. I did. Yeah. I saw a photo that was comparing those one time, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. Reusing stuff in the Star Wars universe. Anyways, I'm going to weigh in on this, and as much as I want to vote for the underdog, Forlom, I can't. I really can't. And primarily because of this. Well, first of all, yes, IG-88's an awesome BA assassin droid. But if we take a look at the Clone Wars series and his predecessor, the IG-86 droids that were the assassin droids used there, and how agile those guys were, I'm only assuming that IG-88 would be at least that agile and skilled. So we've got some video, quote-quote, evidence of what IG-88 might actually look like fighting. So I'm going to have to put a vote in IG-88's category here, which gives us a final tally of 15-4 in favor of IG-88.
Pretty one-sided, I'll say, huh?
yeah. And Chris said it probably would be, right. Which is fine. But it's nice to see what people think
right.
about this sort of thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Anywho.
So, got a very original matchup at the end. It's a Jason. It's a Jason on. That's probably why.
It's a Jason original.
Yeah. So it's that's almost redundant. It's a Jason Hunt. So you'll have to stick around for the end to hear that one. So anyway, let's talk Big Three, Episode 7.
Yeah.
You know, I feel bad kind of leaving out some of the other big – I mean, obviously, we've got Chewie and the droids. But the droids are – to me, they're kind of the same in all six of the films already. I don't see a huge change. I mean, their interactions obviously will probably be a little different. We'll probably see them involved with the newer – you know, the newer heroes that are getting involved. But they're droids. Like, they're not – they don't really evolve emotionally. And Chewbacca.
No, and they've been pretty much the same the whole time, and that's part of their charm is the consistency with them. Which will help smooth out the transition into the sequel trilogy. So
exactly, yeah, and the same with Chewbacca. You know, I mean, I think I don't know. I just he'll probably be kind of the same Chewie. You know, so yeah, I don't see. A whole lot there. But I mean, obviously with the Big Three, I think we'll see stuff, you know,
right.
We should. It's 30. Is it 30 or 35 years? I keep forgetting. It's 30.
I think it's 30, but I've heard both. So
yeah.
Let's 30 to 35.
Yeah. I mean, so this is essentially more than, I mean, this is twice as long as all of them have pretty much lived up to the end of Return of the Jedi. So, I mean, they're not going to be exactly the same people, you know, you know, when I'm 60 years old, I'd like to think I'm going to be acting a little bit differently than I am now at 28. You know what I mean? you know, but yeah, so just talking a little bit about kind of what we might see them at. Anybody you want to start with in particular?
Why don't we, I don't know. Who do you want to start with?
Probably Leia, because I have the least to say about her.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, what I was thinking is... I'm assuming we'll probably see Han and Leia married, and I think it's really important that we do.
Yes.
I'm also hoping to see her as a Jedi Knight in some capacity, whether she's on a new Jedi Council or not. I don't think it matters. I think it'll be extremely important that she is a Jedi, because again, at the end of Return of the Jedi, Yoda makes it very clear that it's now Luke's directive, Yoda's dying wish to Luke, is simply that he pass the torch. He continued the Jedi flame into the galaxy. And Luke is well aware, I mean, as he's having that conversation with Leia, you know, on the Ewok treehouse. I love those places. you know, it's really clear when he, you know, he says to her, you know, you have those powers too. She's probably going to be his first target.
Right.
As to who to start training. Also, I'd like to see Leia still in some capacity involved in whatever political system we have, whether it's the New Republic or, you know, the Gungan Alliance. I don't know what it might be. But I don't think Leia needs to be in a political position, like a formal political position at this point. But I think in some way she has to be somehow involved in the political scene, because right. she is the most prominent politician at the end of the OT for the rebellion. I mean, we also have Mon Mothma, of course, but everybody else in that war room, you know, that meeting in Return of the Jedi, everybody else is pretty much military. You know, Mon Mothma is the only one there who's not military, strictly military.
Right.
So Leia is, and Leia is the only one like that as well. Like she bridges those two worlds. So I think it's important that she, you know, still somehow be involved in politics. And something I thought that might also be a little bit neat to some degree maybe is having her of in some way kind of fostered a safe haven for surviving Alderaanians. I thought that might just be, you know, because we never really get a chance to see her reaction to the destruction of her own home planet. You know,
right.
And she says in A New Hope, you know, like, we have no time for our sorrows now, which is exactly true. They're fighting a war. They don't have time to mourn right now, but they've now had 30 years to mourn and to in some way, you know, dedicate something to that planet.
Right.
So I don't know. And as far as her personality, I mean, I don't see her personality being markedly different. I think we're still going to see a very, you know, confident, intelligent Leia.
Right. Maybe a little more matronly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we might – I mean, she's older, for starters.
Right.
And also, she's not a – well, I mean, we can assume that there's going to be some sort of new conflict and war at this, you know, into episode 7. But at this point, you know, ideally we're going to assume that for the most part it's been a long time of peace. So Leia's been able to kind of relax a bit, you know, into the peacetime.
Right. So, yeah, I'm going to say – some similar things is like you said, I totally agree that, you know, Luke having to pass on what he's learned, Leia is the logical first choice, you know, simply because she's the only one that he knows for sure has these force powers. So she makes that logical, you know, that logical first choice. And so I think training to a Jedi is in some respect would be, really good to see. For Leia's character, I do agree that she should probably have some sort of, maybe not direct political power, but definitely political sway as a character, just simply because of her position at the end of you know, in the rebellion. So, I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to say. It was, but yeah, maybe sort of like a go-between between Luke's new Jedi Order and the Republic. You know, that's sort of a tricky situation because I don't know how the Jedi Order is going to interact with the new government. But yeah, I think, you know, that sort of thing would be good. However, I could also see her being a little bit more independent. You know, not tied down to the government, not tied down to the Jedi specifically, just a little independent in there somewhere. I don't know. And then, of course, we have to consider the fact that she's had kids. And I think, you know, especially at this time, presumably, based on the ages of the other actors that are going to be cast in episode 7, her children, you know, child slash children, whatever it ends up being, have probably left the nest. So she's probably going to try and figure out how she's reintegrating the whole raising kids thing, you know, putting that down, and how she's going to be reintegrating with the greater whatever it is that is going to be, you know, happening there. So, you know, that's going to be interesting to see if that sort of thing comes up. Although I really do like your idea of working with Alderaanian refugees, you know, somehow some sort of like memorial or something that she's been working on in her copious amounts of spare time, because I'm sure she's the least busy of the big three.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see which direction they take with her, because she's got some different options. Obviously, the EU took her in a more political route, which, you know, I can understand why. Not necessarily would I have preferred it that way. I think, you know, it'd be more interesting to see her try and juggle the whole Jedi politician thing right off the bat, rather than saying, oh, well, I'll just put that on the back burner for now.
Well, I think they... go ahead, sorry.
And of course, it's going to be interesting. You know, we can say all these things about the character, but it's going to be interesting to see how well Carrie Fisher can pull this off. So, you know, these sort of things off. Can she, Carrie Fisher, wield a lightsaber?
Can she carry the role?
Yeah, right. You know, which if she does become a Jedi, I would like to see her wield a lightsaber. You know, have a primary female character wielding a lightsaber like that would be kind of cool. But you know, obviously there's the whole stunt double things, and they've made huge jumps in what they can do as far as, you know, the digital face replacement on stunt doubles and things like that, like they did with Christopher Lee and Ian McDiarmid.
Right.
So, I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see if Carrie could do some of that. So.
Right. And I think I just read an article today that I guess she lost 40 pounds already for prepping for the role.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's been doing a very intense, you know, personal training regiment to get ready. And it sounds like, at least from some of her publicists, she's really looking forward to this. You know, I think Carrie Fisher is a person, I mean, from what we know about her, it sounds like she's, you know, she's kind of had a lot of her ups and downs, a lot of downs. A little bit of sounds like she might be a little bit crazy. but I think...
And let me back up here. There was a couple days ago, I'd finished some studying and I was waiting for something on campus. I didn't have any more studying to do. And so I spent the afternoon, watching interviews and video clips with Carrie Fisher, just to sort of get a sense of her and where her head might be with this sort of thing. Cause I'd been kind of concerned about it. And one of the things I ended up watching was the interview that she did at C6. And she was extreme. I mean, part of the crazy that she has in her persona, I think, is at least at this point partly a facade, just because that's, you know, who she likes to be. But it's particularly when it comes to Star Wars, the interview that she did with James Arnold Taylor, she was very, you know, had a lot of fun with it, was very free flowing with the answers, and, you know, very considerate of the fans, and she was really enjoying herself in the interview. So, yeah, I mean, I think she would, you know, be just fine coming back to Episode 7. My only thing is the physical side of things, and if she's working with a physical, you know, personal trainer and stuff, you know, it might be interesting to see if she can surprise us. So,
yeah, and I think for Carrie Fisher too, I think she really enjoyed being Princess Leia. I think she really enjoyed being in Star Wars. And to that degree, I think she really wants to take this seriously. I think she really wants to portray the character well. So I actually have a lot of confidence in that.
Right.
And I also think the team around her, like being with Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford again, I think they can, you know, stabilize her a bit. Not that she's like off the walls crazy, but I think they can be a grounding force for her. And I think she'll be fine.
And I'm sure, especially if she's working with Lucasfilm and Disney again, they're going to have people that are going to be around to help her out, you know, to help keep her grounded and,
right,
you know,
away from the booze.
Stuff like, Right.
Right. You know, what I think might be cool to see with her, though, is if we actually get a Senate chamber again on Coruscant, I would love to see Leia in, like, a Senate pod addressing whoever's it would just be a really cool way of seeing, you know, what we just – all these great things we saw from the PT and now kind of our, you know, original characters fulfilling those roles.
Right.
That might be fun. Again, maybe in a formal way, maybe even just an informal way as, like, whatever this new crisis is that's, you know, on the brink.
I was thinking about this, and this is going to sort of bleed into some of my thoughts about Luke Skywalker a bit, so maybe we'll just kind of go into him next. Sure. But I was thinking, as far as the New Jedi Order, what would be really cool is if it was one of those institutions that works independently, you know, to go help solve crises and be defenders of the peace, and that the Republic has to request aid from them rather than say, hey, this is happening, we need you guys to go there. You know, that Luke would have that sort of autonomy within the Jedi Order. And so having Leia as a go-between between the Order and whatever the new government is would be nice, you know, would be helpful, to say the least. So, you know, she could go, and if my idea actually, you know, has any weight with the creative forces behind Episode 7, you know, she could be going to, you know, present this issue to the government and say, hey, this is happening, and we're trying to help stop it, but you guys are going to have to do something too. So, that would be kind of cool. Yeah. What do you think about
that idea
of the Jedi Order?
I like that. I like that a lot. Do you want to go into Luke then now? Or?
Yeah, let's kind of go into Luke, unless you had anything else you wanted to say on Leia.
No. No.
No?
It's funny, because I just, you know, we're 85 episodes in, we've done a lot of character shows, and yet we've still never done anything with Leia. I like Leia, but I just also, I don't know, I don't want to say it's because I'm a guy, that makes it sound weird, or, you know, like as if I can't identify with a female character. There's just nothing terribly exciting that pulls me to her character. I almost find Padme more compelling than Leia. Except for Revenge of the Sith.
We should do it. He disappears. Yeah. And I've voiced my irritation with
that. Right, right. But yeah, we should do something with her.
Maybe eventually. We should do something with, like, do a Padme / Leia character show.
Yeah.
Combine them.
Right.
Combine it.
Yeah.
That might work.
Yeah, I mean, because the funny thing is, I was thinking of the other day, too, is, like, characters that aren't necessarily favorites of mine, yet are essential. What I mean by that, like, Leia. If Leia wasn't an episode, like, if we were getting Luke and Han back, but no Leia, something would be missing.
Right.
Same with Chewie. If Chewie wasn't there, something would be missing. Not because I'm, like, a huge Chewie fan, but just something would be missing.
Exactly.
You know? And, you know, that's how I feel with a lot of the characters that are, like, Lando. I'm not a huge Lando fan. But I love Lando. Like, I love when he's there. Like, he just brings an added element to it. Leia is an essential but non-favorite character of mine. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
yes. But anyway, like, going with Luke, I mean, it's pretty apparent he'll probably be in the capacity of the Grand Master of the Jedi Order in the way that Yoda was in the PT. And I think Luke will, in some way, not distance out of, like, a negative sense, but in a positive way, he'll distance the Jedi Order a bit from the political system. Because we can probably assume that he'll eventually have learned some stuff about what happened during the prequel era, what happened with the fall of the Jedi Order. He's going to be interested in that. I mean, Luke is a very curious individual. I mean, we see that up through Return of the Jedi. He wants to know as much as he can out of for goodness sake, you know what I mean? Not because he's just a nosy kid. It's because he's sincerely interested. And he seems like the type of character that would, in this 30-year interim period, spend a lot of time researching and really thinking and actually communing with the Force about how to rebuild the Jedi Order so as to prevent what happened in the prequel era from happening again. So I see it really being a reestablishment of the keepers of the peace, not a group that is directly affiliated with a political system or a government system. something that's independent of that, but at the, you know, at the beck and call of all the, you know, all the star systems in the universe. And I think something I think that'll be unique about Luke is I think Luke will be more knowledgeable of the Force than any character we've seen in Star Wars, even Yoda. Even though Yoda was 900 years old, I think Luke will have a very unique relationship with the Force. And the reason I say that is because of his really unique story in the OT. I mean, mm-hmm. he wasn't raised in the Jedi Order. All of his social interactions are outside of Force users for much of his upbringing. And I think also he has the advantage of having Force ghosts to talk to. I think
exactly.
In some capacity we're going to see, I wouldn't be surprised if we see the ghost of Obi-Wan show up, or even the ghost of Anakin, or the ghost of Yoda.
Right.
You know, having that advantage of having a relationship with, you know, people that have become one with the Force, they're going to impart to Luke an even greater knowledge than that was available to them at the time, because that wasn't something that that had happened by the end of the PT. So I think Luke is going to have a very unique relationship with the Force. I think, you know, one of the biggest differences you see in Luke Skywalker's character is really between Empire and Jedi. You know, when mm-hmm. Empire begins, he's still kind of the same kid he was in A New Hope. And even at the end, he's still that kid who's becoming a Jedi. But when I just watched Return of the Jedi this morning, but that that first scene of Luke walking into Jabba's palace, you know, the dark robes, and so in control of himself.
Right.
So centered in the Force that's going to continue to grow. And this is why I also don't think Luke will be married. I could be wrong, and as long as it's done well, it's fine if he is. But I would prefer to see mm-hmm. him not get married. Whether or not other Jedi are, could kind of care less. But I don't think Luke would be, because, you know, I always think of, whenever I see Luke in those first few shots of Return of the Jedi, I always hear Yoda saying, you know, a Jedi has the most, the deepest commitment, the most serious mind.
Mm.
I think Luke really tried to encapsulate that in Return of the Jedi. He's still fun. He still smiles and laughs with his friends, but there is this seriousness to him that, is somebody who's just so caught up in knowing the Force.
Right.
And I just think that, you know, I can't remember who said this. It might have been Cohen or something, but, you know, you could potentially even see Luke going and becoming a hermit on Tatooine.
I think it was Steve.
Steve said that. I don't see that happening. I don't see him completely retreating like that. That just doesn't seem to be part of his character. But I do see him as somebody who's so in relationship with the Force that there is a very deep seriousness to him, somebody who's constantly probing the mystery of the Force, and that is where his life's work will essentially blossom from. And that's why I don't see him taking a wife, not because he sees it as something wrong, or in the, you know, that he sees that attachment, he has the same issue with attachment like the, you know, the old Jedi Order. I think for him, it's just, he just doesn't have time for it.
Right.
You know, I mean,
his focus and his energies are with the Force rather than
right.
trying to find a relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, to use the Bible, I think that's the thing with Jesus, all the things, oh, he might have had a wife. No, he didn't, not because he had an issue with marriage or anything of that. He didn't because his life's work just didn't have time for it. You know, like, it's just, there's sometimes people who are so committed to something that they just don't have time for other things. And I see that as being Luke's character when we get right. to episode 7.
I think a lot of what Luke, his personal character, is going to be based off of what kind of Jedi Order we get. And how often and how frequent his interactions with the spirits of Yoda and Obi-Wan are. Because we could get a Luke that is completely, you know, fighting stress all the time because he's trying to, you know, rebuild this Jedi Order to a place where it can help the galaxy at large rather than just put out, you know, individual fires, you know, sporadically, you know. But I was just thinking about this as we were talking, but at the end of Return of the Jedi, we see the Jedi Temple now. So Luke could go back and restart the Jedi Order from there on Coruscant. It would be interesting if he did, and it'd be really interesting to see sort of how he went about doing that. But, yeah. But that's just sort of a thought that popped into my head as we were talking. But I agree. I don't think he's going to be a hermit. It's an interesting idea to think about if he becomes a hermit. But I think he's going to be a teacher and a student of the Force. He's going to be a student of the Force and an instructor to those behind him, because there's not going to be anybody on his level with the Force. See, there may be a couple of other masters, but they're still going to look to him to find out, you know, how to go about doing things and to learn from him. He's going to be the top of the totem pole, end of story. And so that's a lot of weight on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see, you know, with whatever this new crisis comes up, how he handles all the pressure of being the galaxy, the face of the Jedi Order now to the galaxy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I think as far as the hermit thing goes, again, is the thing about Luke and the start of episode 4. I mean, this kid can't wait to get out of this backward planet. And I don't think that desire would change as he got older. I think he does have an authentic desire to be in relationship and community. That's a really big part of who Luke Skywalker is. So that precludes him from becoming a hermit, I would think. But also, like you were saying, though, with all this pressure and stuff, one of the things I didn't like the EU doing, like, and I'm talking out to the, I think it's the Legacy of the Force series. Is that the one with Darth Cadus?
Yes.
Okay. So whenever we see Luke in that series, I remember him always just being kind of exhausted with stress. I didn't like that. And not because it doesn't, you know, because I personally don't like it. I don't like it because I don't think it does justice to who his character would have become.
Right.
I don't see Luke as somebody, you know, yeah, that's a lot of pressure. But also look at all the pressure on him in Empire and Jedi to become a Jedi and save the galaxy. Look at his sister Leia. All the pressure on this young girl to be this political figurehead for this rebellion movement.
That's true.
They're always able to stay on top of that with clear heads. I think, and especially with Luke's unique relationship with the Force, he'll have plenty of ways of dealing with that stress. And I think that's what's going to make Luke such a great character, is kind of like Ben Kenobi in episode 4. I mean, he's got the pressure of getting Luke to leave Tatooine, to start his training, even though he still has probably some self-doubt about himself considering what happened to Anakin. But he's still like kind of this easygoing person because he knows that the bigger picture of the Force is in control. And I think Luke is going to be well aware of that. I don't think he's going to be this kind of just like exhausted, burnout Jedi Master that we saw a lot in the later EU, which again, I don't think that's Luke Skywalker.
No, I agree. And that was just, you know, one of the things that had crossed my mind.
Yeah.
But particularly with this new crisis is I'm assuming, you know, and we'll find out, but I'm assuming that this will be the biggest crisis to hit the galaxy since Return of the Jedi. And so it'll be interesting to see how he's able to, you know, steer this, you know, ship called the New Jedi Order, whatever he calls it, you know, in dealing with this crisis. And I think he's going to be a lot more interactive and a lot more personal with his students.
I think so too.
I don't think we're going to see a Jedi Order, you know, nearly to the, you know, numbers that we had in the prequels. It's still going to be small and fledgling even 30 years, you know, after Return of the Jedi. So I think maybe we'll get a couple hundred at the most, you know, and he'll probably know every single one of their names, and he'll be very involved in making the decisions as to who can come in, and, you know, very involved in the training and everything. So that will be interesting to see, because he'll be sort of like an Obi-Wan or a Qui-Gon or a Yoda, you know, dealing with these new people trying to come into, you know, learn about what this thing called the Force is and rebirthing the Jedi. So it'll be interesting to see how that is portrayed and stuff. And I think that'll be more interesting than if he's, you know, than how he deals with this, the stress or what the pressure of this new crisis or whatever, but how he deals with his students. That'll be the interesting thing. And I think he will be very kind but firm, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, even the way he sees Obi-Wan and Yoda, I mean, he sees them as almost like, I mean, he sees them as friends. Not merely just, you know, detached mentors. You know,
right.
he has real feelings for them. And I think they developed feelings for Luke in a way that the old Jedi Order didn't necessarily. I mean, Obi-Wan and Anakin were kind of the unique ones in the PT, even, like being as close as they were.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I totally agree. I think there is going to be that. That's a really good point. Yeah, I like that. Like the fact that Luke will know them. And I think, you know, what's going to happen with the Jedi Order is rather than being referred to as just Jedi Master, I think they're going to refer to Luke as Pope Luke Skywalker. That's my prediction.
That's funny.
So
one other last thing with the ghosts, and I don't remember if I said this already. Stop me if I did. But I was thinking about it a bit earlier today. It's going to be interesting to see the regularity with which Luke sees Obi-Wan and Yoda.
Mm.
You know, if he can just sort of say, hey, I need some advice, and they show up, or if they decide when or how often they are able to, you know, appear. And what will also be interesting to see is if other Jedi can see them
or if
it's just Luke.
Yeah.
So, you know, and of course we're assuming that Yoda and Obi-Wan will show up as a Force ghost, but I don't see why not. So, I'm expecting it, but you know, I won't be supremely disappointed if they don't. I might be a little bit, but, I think it'd be great if they did. Something that I was, you know, running through my head earlier today.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I kind of would think that they don't just kind of appear regularly, because I think it's really important that Luke is the one who, you know, reestablishes it without getting this constant. And Yoda makes it seem like that too. I mean, when he's dying in Return of the Jedi, you know, pass on what you've learned. Like, you know, Yoda's going to be with you in spirit in a sense. But if he's always showing up just telling him what to do, that takes away Luke's ownership of it. But, you know, you might have made this point a while ago, Jason, one of the first times we ever did Episode 7 News, but, you know, potentially, maybe he hasn't really been in touch with them much in the last 30 years, but they show up because something really ominous is on the horizon. And they're there to help see Luke through this new storm. You know, that might even make it even more impactful, you know what I mean? Or maybe if anything else, like he's had like occasional dreams where they show up, or like in the past, like maybe they just normally occasionally speak to him. You know, the will of the Force speaks through the voice of Yoda or speaks through the voice of Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. But maybe they fit, you know, like again, like that physical manifestation, they show up because like, holy hell, it's going down. You know what I mean? But yeah. Well, certainly.
Right.
Had a little bit more to say about Luke than Leia, am I right?
Right. Well, I mean, you can't talk about Luke without talking the Jedi Order.
Right.
With Episode 7. So I think that's partly why.
Yeah.
So what about your boy Han?
Oh,
where do you want to see him?
Well, it sounds like he's getting a big part, like a bigger part than Luke and Leia. It sounds like they're more supporting characters, whereas Han's going to be one of the leads, is one of the articles I read. Again, speculation, who knows?
We'll see.
But, yeah, you know, I think, again, with Han is I'm hoping I'll see him married to Leia as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, though, in this, you know, Han is still Han Solo. He is not going to just settle in a nice Coruscant flat, put his feet up, and retire. That's not Han Solo. I mean, there is a need for adventure for this guy. There is a need for doing stuff. So I think, you know, when Episode 7 kind of begins, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in some capacity still running occasional missions for the Republic or whatever it's called. You know, still being active because, again, he's not going to just sit on the sidelines. I think as far as his character goes, I think that Harrison Ford will have no problem doing this. is just slipping back into that that same wit, that same cockiness that Han Solo always had. Real quick side note, I don't know if you've seen this interview that's been popping up. It was from a few years ago with Harrison Ford, where he basically bashes Han Solo again because he just didn't like the character. But one thing that I found really funny is he says that, you know, Han Solo is not a compelling character, and he's not nearly as compelling as Indiana Jones. Are you kidding me? There's nothing compelling about Indiana Jones. Like, I love Indiana Jones, but they're like, he is one. I mean, he's not, his character's never developed in any of those films. I mean, he's just a cut and dry character. He's fun, but he's right out of like a serial story, you know, to me, more so than Han Solo. I see a story arc with Han Solo. I don't see a story arc with Indiana Jones. Anywho, that's not the point. But, you know, I think Han Solo is always cocky. He's always going, and I call it confident, but borders on cocky. And you even right. see that in Return of the Jedi, right? Like, they're coming to the landing platform, you know, and you see all the huge part of the base, and, you know, oh, Chewie and I got into place a lot heavier guard than this. You know, like, Han always has kind of this, like, confident, cocky attitude. And I think as he gets older, I mean, Han Solo is going to be a seven-year-old character when we get to episode 7. He's going to be even a little bit more cocky, because, you know, how older people are. They get really set in their ways, really set in who they are. And I think also Han, you know, I think the Han Solo we knew before, you know, right, like, especially throughout most of episode 4 until the end, is a guy who doesn't really see his self-value. Like, he doesn't really want to throw himself into a rebellion because he just doesn't see any real value in anything. But at this point, even by the end of Return of the Jedi, he heavily values his friends, his relationships with them, and his allegiance to this rebellion. And now we can assume he probably has a family. I mean, Han is a very loyal person. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, like, I can also see him, especially if he is in, like, a bigger starring role with the new people, kind of being the instructor. Like, kid, let me tell you how it really is. Like, that's something I can just see Han Solo doing. Like, even though he's much older than our new heroes, he's going to tell them like it is. Because he's done it all. You know, he knows what he's talking about. That confident cockiness of Han Solo is just going to be strengthened with age, I feel like. But I also think, in an endearing way, whatever this new crisis is, whatever the conflict of Episode 7 will be, mm-hmm. I think Han is going to be the most vocal and first one to act against it. And the reason I say that is because of how loyal Han Solo is to the people he cares about. As soon as something rises up to threaten the people he cares about, he's going to want to face it like he does when the dining room doors open and Vader's there. He's going to pull out his gun and start shooting.
Right.
You know, that's Han Solo. And I think that'll still be Han Solo at 7 years old. Is when this new crisis comes to face, Han's reaction is, give me my gun. I'm not going to let this harm the people I care about. You know, I think there's that stubbornness to Han Solo. That we'll see in the sequel trilogy.
I see him a little bit more in the same sort of cocky attitude, but a little more lighthearted, I think. Slightly more lighthearted, because you know, we haven't had a war going on, and he's been able to not be on the run from the law. So I sort of see this mischievous, you know, hey, it's me type of Han, you know, just older, you know, it's trying to, you know, get Leia to sneak out of meetings and, you know, go off on an adventure or something, you know, or, you know, taking his kids out for a joyride across, you know, in the Millennium Falcon or something, you know, things like that. You know, he's probably still running some sort of missions for whatever the new government is, but in a unique capacity. I don't think he's going to be like a general or anything still. He's not going to have like an official rank, but he still does stuff for them because of who he is. And honestly, I would not be surprised if he's the one, you know, running some sort of little, you know, mission with a couple of these kids. You know, they're going to go do some sort of, you know, standard sort of, you know, pick up, drop offs, you know, whatever sort of thing. And they're the ones that find out this big you know, evil, this whatever the new crisis is. They're the ones that sort of run across it. And obviously, at this point, we're probably going to have, you know, a reestablished government of sorts, plus Luke is probably going to be rebuilding the Jedi Order. And so we've got the politics, and we've got the sort of religion, spiritual side of things, and Han's going to be right in the middle, you know, cutting through all the gobbledygook, you know, with his very straight, no-nonsense sort of, you know, style that he has been doing forever. So he's going to be sort of that voice of reason, the sort of like, he's probably going to be the call to action, I think, for whatever this issue is. But I think at least at first, he's probably going to be a little bit mischievous until, you know, things start going south. So, and then he'll be all business. But yeah, that's sort of where I see Han, you know, enjoying not being tied down to the government, but not necessarily being settled, because Han doesn't settle.
Right. Yep.
So, oh, and I know there's been a little bit of talk out there about, you know, there was some talk on our page too, you know, and I've heard it other places, that, you know, maybe there's the possibility that Han and Leia aren't married, or they were married and now they're not. Sort of thing. And to be perfectly honest, Star Wars, I don't think, does that sort of weird, complicated relationship sort of stuff. They just don't.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to have any sort of like, you know, divorced Han and Leia, or they're a couple but never got married. Even though they had, you know, been living and have kids or something like that, I'm gonna just about guarantee you they got married, they had kids or kid, and they're still married. So,
yeah, I mean, I completely agree. There's just not room for that other stuff with Star Wars, and also it'd just be an awkward story then, right?
Why
bring them all back to have this awkwardness? You know,
exactly.
It wouldn't make sense. It no. wouldn't feel right. It wouldn't feel like no. Star Wars, you know. I mean, when we were talking earlier before I started recording, I told you, you know, how I really find Phantom Menace to have that Star Wars feel. Mm-hmm. Episode 7 would not feel like Star Wars if you've got Han and his ex-wife Leia. Like, it's just that language doesn't make sense in Star Wars, and no. it's not a knock on any sort of contemporary issue. It's just simply an observation of these films,
right? And the thing with Star Wars is it's not a contemporary reflection.
Right. It's a myth.
It's just archetypes and yeah. myths and that sort of thing. You know, classic types of stories, classic myths, classic storytelling types, classic archetypes, that's Star Wars. And we're not going to be dealing with current contemporary issues in Star Wars.
Right.
Which is not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I completely agree. And if that were for some reason, the only way I could have seen that as being even a possibility is if they couldn't get Han back or something, right?
Right.
But even that, I feel like they probably would have just been like, nope, he was killed or something, right? Like they would have written him out in a different way than, oh yeah, we're divorced, he's not here. Like it just doesn't make sense in Star Wars, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it really doesn't.
Because what that does is it does. And by whenever something like this, a big mythological story, if it took something extremely narrow to a certain culture, it really misses the grand scope of what a myth is supposed to do. It's meant mm-hmm. to be encapsulating. It's meant to have like a broad spectrum. So yeah, I'm 100% on board with you on that. So there you go. But you know, just to wrap it up, I think it might be interesting just to, I didn't actually think about this a whole lot, but would you be interested, you know, talking a little bit about what do we suspect their fates might be in the sequel trilogy?
Sure. Sure. And, you know, I've been pretty upfront. You know, can I jump in first?
So, already have.
All right. Thank you.
It is your birthday.
Well, yes. And I've been pretty upfront with the way I think Luke and Han specifically are going to go out. I think Luke's going to go out in the first movie, come back as a Force ghost and that sort of thing. You know, although it could be episode 8 where that happens. And I think Han's going to go out in a blaze of glory in the Millennium Falcon with Chewbacca. I'm predicting that in episode 8, but it could be, you know, one of the other films. I don't know. So that, but that's the way I think those two characters are going to go out. And Leia's the weird one.
Yep.
I don't know where to put Leia. I don't know if she's. I think she might survive the trilogy. Which would be really weird. But, you know, it could be one of those things where she survives the trilogy, you know, dealing with the loss of her brother, you know, who then comes back in the Force to reassure her, and then has to deal with the loss of her husband, comes out on the other side, and then at the end of episode 9, she sort of, you know, rises up to try and fill the enormous shoes left by Luke with the new Jedi Order that he's established. Mm-hmm. So I think she might survive, although it's entirely possible for her to go out with Han, you know, on the Falcon. Although I think he would do everything in his power to make sure that she was not on the Falcon if he knew it was going to blow up. So,
yeah. See, my answer might change in 2 months, but right now this is what I see happening. I see Han, Chewie, and probably actually Leia going out in episode 7. I see all of them dying together. Because I don't know what else to do with Leia. So I'm going to kill her with Han. I actually see Luke potentially surviving the trilogy.
I mean, it's possible.
I don't know if I see Luke dying in 7, maybe 8, but if Luke survives 7 and 8, I don't see him dying, period. Well, actually, no, I could see him dying in 9, like his dad. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we've talked about this at length, and I don't want to bore people by talking about it again. But yeah, I mean, I definitely see Han and Chewie going out in a blaze of glory, and I almost do want to see them go out at the end of episode 7.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening. I would prefer it in episode 8 to be perfectly, you know.
Yeah.
Just that we get a little bit more time with them. But I could totally see, you know, him, you know, and then his death is what sparks everyone else to action, you know.
Yeah.
You know, gets everybody else up off their dithering butts and, you know, gets the galaxy, you know, back at war.
Excuse me.
Love me. But yeah, not that you mentioned it with Luke, you know, where it would be interesting if he died, you know, right off the bat in episode 7. It's entirely possible that he could survive the whole thing or, you know, die towards the end of episode 9 and then it be like Return of the Jedi all over again and he shows up at the end, you know.
Smiling in a treehouse.
Right? Yeah, so, you know, if Luke dies, you know, obviously there's the whole Force Ghost potential for him. Sure. And so he could be at Obi-Wan and die, you know, right off the bat, or he could be. Yeah, that's interesting. Now you've got me questioning.
Yeah. Can you see me? My hand is raised.
No, you're a swirly on my Skype. Okay.
Yeah, mine too. I'm sorry. That's okay. Anyway, I think there's a potential that Leia could also be a Force Ghost.
That's true.
You know what I mean? She's definitely going to be a Jedi in some capacity, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Luke's not going to be like, hey, I know you're busy and all, but you're the one person I know who has an enormous Force potential. Why don't we ignore it? You know, like, I just don't see that. I don't see that happening.
Right.
You know, I think Leia is going to be a powerful Jedi who I think has the possibility to become one with the Force. So I could see that. I could see Leia becoming a Force Ghost. You know?
Always in motion is the future.
Yeah. Maybe she's the one who dies in episode 7. And her Force Ghost comes to Han and Luke.
Ooh.
And then we see Han die in episode 8 and Luke survives it all.
Oh, man.
I don't know that they would kill all three. What do you think? Do you think at the end of the sequel trilogy they'll all be dead? If there is going to be one to survive, I could honestly see it being Luke. I don't think it would be Leia.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think it would be cool to see Leia as a Force Ghost as well, because she's a woman. We don't have any Force Ghost ladies. Maybe she can hang out with. Maybe she can hang out with. Maybe Natalie Portman will come back, and they can use her Force Ghost. Oh, never mind, because then they'd probably bring back Hayden Christensen. Son of a bee sting. anyway,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, she could easily become a Force Ghost too. So you know what would really blow my mind?
What would blow your mind?
Han Solo becomes a Force Ghost.
What?
Chewie comes back as a Force Ghost with Jar Jar.
Oh boy. He's back.
Oh my gosh. That's how
this trilogy ends.
I hope episode 9 ends with Jar Jar doing that, just so Joe Hogan can be so happy. Oh boy.
Joe is going to kill us both.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back as Force Ghosts.
Yes.
Miss our sparkly glory.
So yeah, that's all my speculations for now.
Woo.
Before we wrap up though, I did just, you know, I was talking to you about this before, mm-hmm. and people that are at the Facebook wall have probably noticed I literally have watched the entire Star Wars saga in the last week. I watched one movie a day. Well, except the other day I did have to skip one. But almost for the last 6 days I've watched a Star Wars movie. I don't think I've ever done that, like incessant days like that, just watching the saga in order. First off, just an overall observation is I freaking love Star Wars. I mean, I love this story. Every movie I watched grabbed my attention, you know, from episode 1 through episode 6. I mean, I am totally encapsulated. I mean, still to this day, I mean, Empire Strikes Back still just, I just love the Empire Strikes Back. It still is the best Star Wars film to me, and it always will be. There's something about that movie I literally did. When I watched it the other day, I watched it in bed as well. So that night. like I got up in the morning and watched it. And then when I went to bed at night, I watched because I have like the original 80s version on my computer. I put that on when I went to bed. Like, I just love Empire. But other than that, I swear, like every Star Wars movie I watched became my second favorite as I was watching it. Because they're all just so good. But what I really observed though is just this really big difference between Anakin Skywalker and Luke Skywalker. Mm-hmm. And really, like, except for episode 1, I mean, episode 1, Anakin's a kid, and he's a really nice, selfless kid. Episodes 2 and 3, he's just kind of this brooding punk. Like, really. I mean, yeah. Thank God for the Clone Wars TV series, because Matt Lanter totally makes Anakin lovable. Hayden Christensen's Anakin is just not lovable. Not because he's a bad actor or all that. I mean, just like the way his character is developed is he's just kind of a whiny little bitch. You know, so excuse the word, but like, you know,
we'll bleep that out.
Yeah. yeah. But you know, I just, you know, Anakin, and this is what I observed. Anakin is a slave, right? Like he grows up as a slave who has no control over his destiny, has no control over his life. When he becomes this Jedi, I think it's hard for him to detach from that feeling of being enslaved, though, to the Jedi Order. You know, that's one of my favorite episodes in the Clone Wars, is the Slaver's arc in season 4.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, when I can't remember the queen's name or whatever, but I'm sure you – what is her name? Do you remember?
Oh, she's a Zygerian queen.
Yeah.
The Queen of Zygeria, and I don't remember her name.
Does she even have a name?
I think she does. I'm pretty sure she does. I just don't remember it.
Okay. But, you know, I mean, she equates his allegiance to the Jedi as a form of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that got under his skin in that episode, like in that series. And I think that's part of Anakin's problem is specifically, I was keying in on how they saw the Force. How were they becoming a Jedi? Anakin is becoming a Jedi to become powerful. Not initially because he's evil, but simply I think it's a subconscious reaction to growing up for 9 years as a slave. He wants to be in control of his destiny because he was not in control of his early life. So he's doing everything he can to do that in hopes of everything else around him going well. So, you know, that's really important for Anakin's development. He's training to become a Jedi because he wants the power side.
Exactly.
And initially not for malicious reasons.
No.
But then when we look at Luke's story, this is just a kid who is fascinated. He is in awe of the Force. And Luke is gaining more and more knowledge of the Force simply for the sake of wisdom. And he wants to then take that wisdom and share it with the galaxy. That's the main difference. That's what makes him the hero and Anakin the tragic character. Anakin is doing it for all the wrong reasons. Luke is doing it for all the right reasons.
And it'll be interesting to see where episode 7 of the sequel trilogy fits into that pattern.
Right. Exactly.
So
there you go.
Woo!
Some thoughts on the Star Wars saga.
Yay!
In a nutshell. Jason, before we go, what is our Jason Hunt matchup?
Oh, yes. This is going to be fun. So I decided to come up with the matchup, and it's going to be Captain Tarples versus one of General Grievous's Magna Guards. So I'm sure nobody on Earth has ever thought of that as being a matchup before. So I did. but yes, we want to know what you think about that. Who would win in a duel between Captain Tarples and one of Grievous's Magna Guards? And Carl, if they want to do that or comment on this episode, give us their thoughts on where they think the big three will be by episode 7, or even their fates. How can they do that?
Well, you can get in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. You can always email us at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com. And you can always find us in all the other wonderful podcasts from the 2nd Airborne Division on StarWarsReport.com.
Indubitably. All right. I think that's been a really good episode. I don't have anything else to say. Do you have anything else to say?
Happy birthday, Jason.
Oh, shucks. Now you make me blush. well, in that case, we will wrap up this episode of the Wampus Lair podcast. This has been episode number 85. Here we go again. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Oh, do you promise?
I do promise. So, yeah, I think that's it. Are we ready to record?
Yes, are you done drinking?
Yes, for now.
Mr. Jar Jar Binks, Mr. Your humble servant.
That won't be necessary.
Oh, but it is. 'Tis demanded by the gods, it is.